everyone. This is Luke John Louis, the host of the Deep Voice Man Show. Thanks for joining us today. We have a treat in store for you guys. Our guest is Lynn Catalano. I hope I pronounced it correctly. And I believe I did. So just real quick, it's an honor to have you here as a guest. You are someone who is a entrepreneur, a speaker, an attorney, and you help folks identify toxic relationships and rise above. I know you're a very busy woman, so you were able to carve out some time in your packed schedule to sit down and have a chat with us. So we're very fortunate to have you here. So I guess to start off, can you tell us about your background and how you first gravitated towards doing what you do today?
Yes, absolutely. I've really embraced a whole lot of change throughout my career. I went to law school with the goal of becoming a sports agent. At that time, I had just ended my college degree with 4 years of college, all 4 years of the Buffalo Bills going to the Super Bowl. And I was charged up and loving sports. This was the age of Jerry Maguire. I really felt like I could be a sports agent. Well, I went to law school and really enjoyed the whole experience. I started a sports and entertainment law society, brought in all different speakers from both industries locally and anyone we could get, really. Obviously, we had zero budget, but it was incredible. It was a very fast lesson in both event planning and speaking on off the cuff. So it was a great lesson. I took the bar exam when I graduated because it seemed like the thing to do. And I passed the bar, thankfully, on the first time. And then as a woman, I had some choices to make. My boyfriend at the time had proposed, and I really wanted to start a family. And the idea of moving to an unknown city to pay my dues in a career for the next 10 years or have a family, I chose family. So at that point, I was the opportunity arose to lead a foundation. And at that point, I had never even considered nonprofit organizational work. But here I had certified in tax law. I had a law degree. I certainly understood about bylaws and, all of the tax planning of estate giving and plan giving. And so why not? I ended up building that hospital foundation for the next 16 years. And then I went on to another foundation. And what I discovered after being a professional fundraiser for more than 20 years, leading these organizations to their goals, was that I loved speaking to groups of all sizes. That was the best part of my job, whether it was a small group or an association or an organization or being the keynote at an annual meeting. I loved it. And of course, someone else brought that to my attention because we don't often see the forest for the trees, but that was how I decided to launch Lynn Catalano Speaks. Also, what I realized was that I experienced so many toxic bosses that I felt the need to teach others how to identify these people and adapt to their poor leadership. I'd also like to teach leaders in their businesses how to be more effective and avoid those pitfalls.
Wow. That is an amazing story. It's interesting. It seems like you found your true calling and what really kind of motivates you and drives you. Mark Twain actually said that everyone has two birthdays, the day they're born and the day they figure out why, and you know both your birthdays, which is amazing.
Thank you.
Yes.
Great.
And it's interesting how life twists and turns. Now, you went to law school and you wanted to be a sports agent.
Right.
Sort of like the movie, right, with Tom Cruise. And so, and I could see why, because obviously Buffalo is a very big kind of sports town. My cousin actually went to college in Buffalo. I think he went to SUNY Buffalo. And and you guys do really do know how to have a good time. And I'll say that. Yeah. And it was actually the college he went to was ranked as one of the top party schools, actually. But I digress.
Oh,
but,
my goodness. Oh, my goodness.
And so it's interesting. So you went to school, and the Bills, my understanding, went to the Super Bowl 4 years in a row. So the whole entire time you were – and obviously it's heartbreaking.
Yes, that first year particularly so. That first year we came so close, so
Definitely. And it's interesting because I actually had another guest on the show, Mike DiCiocio, who's also a member of the Bills Mafia, I'm sure, like yourself. And and you guys really love your sport. So I can see why you may have been interested, obviously, in this world and in the sports agent world. But, you know, obviously life had another door for you to enter, so to speak. And right. And so, but congrats on passing your bar exam for the first time. That's amazing.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yes.
The worst experience ever. Don't recommend.
Oh my goodness. Wow. You know, it's interesting. John F. Kennedy's, I think, son actually, I think, failed it 3 or 4 times, and they made fun of him, calling him hunk.
Yep.
It was so embarrassing, but I can understand. But passing it the first time, amazing. So you went into fundraising in that nonprofit sector, so to speak.
Yes.
But you realized you came alive when you were speaking in front of groups of all sizes. And
correct.
It's interesting how you had a love and a passion for that, because so many people are scared of public speaking, and they say it's one of the top fears of why? I'm curious, like, obviously you must be in that minority of people who loves to speak, be a public speaker, and that's amazing. And because if everyone had that skill, then it'd be hard to find work, I imagine. So you want to have that. So that's amazing that you're a great speaker. And, you know, speakers and people who specialize in giving speeches, there's definitely a special place in society for you guys. And I've spoken to a lot of people who are speakers, and they absolutely love it. And it's amazing. Now, you talk about toxic people. You mentioned you've had toxic bosses, and it's interesting. I think we've all had that experience of dealing with people who have these kind of out there dangerous personalities, so to speak, narcissists and whatnot. So that's amazing that you help people to protect themselves and whatnot. I think that's incredible.
Thank you.
Yeah. So I'm curious. Now, obviously, you speak to a lot of entrepreneurs, leaders, and executives and whatnot. And I'm just wondering, now, obviously, we all got hit with that sucker punch, the pandemic. It just came out of nowhere and hit us all upside the head, right? So, I'm curious, how would you describe the current state of affairs when it comes to business and leadership and entrepreneurialism, and what challenges, if any, has the pandemic posed?
Well, I know that the pandemic created a lot of issues for some entrepreneurs, positive and negative, but for me, it lit a fire under my posterior and showed me that there was room for me to grow outside of the position I was in. So for me, that time during the pandemic showed me I couldn't do things the way I had always done them. It didn't work anymore. You know, in fundraising, my MO, my modus operandi, is really to build a relationship and get to know someone. And how do you do that? You don't really do that on the phone or with a letter or through email. You do that face-to-face. Well, the pandemic put a complete stop to that. I couldn't meet with anybody. And never mind that, in New York State, all the restaurants closed. So there was nowhere to go. So I had to shift what I was doing to utilize digital marketing and all different streams of social media. And I think that is the best thing that came out of the pandemic is that we realized that we can build a network and connect with people in different ways. I mean, I don't even know if I had heard the word Zoom before the pandemic. I don't, you know, and now it's
right.
Like completely in everyone's vernacular, right? We all use that every day. Do you want to take a Zoom call later? Do you want to, you know? So we learned how to navigate the obstacles that the pandemic presented. For me, I dedicated myself to my entrepreneurial effort, and it's interesting because speaking events, first they just went down completely. First they canceled conferences. They didn't know what to do, right, because we couldn't mm-hmm. gather. And then they started to have virtual conferences, and they started to utilize these different, you know, all of a sudden motherhood is or necessity necessity is the mother of invention, right?
Yes.
So, like, we needed different hubs and platforms and ways for people to speak through these mm-hmm. internet platforms. And so events were virtual. Now I see they're going back to gathering, but most of them are in some kind of a hybrid form where people who aren't comfortable coming can still attend the event virtually. So as a speaker, I think that it's going to be an incredible next 12 months of events because of that effect, like a lot of pent-up demand.
Wow.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I could imagine. And obviously you're definitely very well positioned for that sort of explosion. And demand that wave, which is amazing.
I hope so.
Yes.
I hope so.
You got it. Well, I definitely know so. And it's interesting that you mentioned there was positive and negative effects. Obviously, for the restaurant industry, it was somewhat negative, although some restaurants were able to actually thrive because they were able to adapt or pivot is the word you mentioned. And so, you know, it's interesting. You took it and use it as fuel. You mentioned that it lit a fire for you, which is amazing.
Yes. Yes.
And you didn't, you know, cower or put your head in the sand or roll up in a fetal position or whatnot. You did something. You responded. Now, it's interesting that they say life is 10% what happens to you and 90% how you respond. And so you're definitely living proof of that. And it's funny how so many great you mentioned that necessity is the mother of all inventions and whatnot, but you also hard times tend to produce a lot of creativity and ingenuity and change. And it's interesting, during the Great Depression, a lot of great companies were created during that time. And that surprises some people. But history always tends to kind of repeat itself. And I think this time the same thing will happen now. Also, you mentioned Zoom, and obviously they've been able to, I'm sure, thrive. If only one had bought stock in Zoom before this, you'd be doing very well.
Who knew?
Right. It's interesting because obviously with Zoom you could expand your reach because before you did things face to face. Now with Zoom and doing things virtually, particularly with these virtual conferences. You could actually reach out to even more people and whatnot.
Yep.
So
all around the world. Yep.
Yeah. And so that is amazing and whatnot. So obviously some good came out of this, or a lot of good came out of this pandemic. Now, the thing is, we're actually entering that post-pandemic world, particularly with the distribution of the vaccines and whatnot, finally, you know, seeing the light at the end of the tunnel. I'm curious, where do you see things in the future, and where do you see yourself in that future?
So I only see speaking and coaching and consulting and workshops as being even bigger and growing in the future. I really don't see it as an industry declining. I really only see positive things for it because more than ever, companies realize they need to surround themselves with the smartest people. And now because it's so much easier globally. I mean, think about it. You can actually do a workshop on one of these platforms in a company, and I could be in another country than where they're doing the workshop. I think it's so important to talk about these concepts. Like, now we're finally realizing that we have to take the stigmas out of mental illness and address the actual issues. So, yes, if you have someone that is toxic in your organization, and, you know, hopefully they're not, but more than likely they're a leader, what do you do? Like, how do you cope? I think you're going to seek help. I think you're going to talk to people. And I think that the social media platforms have made it easier than ever to reach people today. So I only see the industries I'm involved with is getting bigger and expanding and growing.
Wonderful. And I completely agree with you that there's, I think, more and more people understand the need for a coach. And to guide them. My understanding is that, you know, my belief is that everyone needs a coach. And I've interviewed a lot of coaches, and they're all excellent people. And I've interviewed people who are clients of coaches, often the same types of people. And they tell me that a good coach can take years off of your, shave years off of your learning curve. And I truly believe that. And it's a quite an amazing investment. And so, and you talked about the more people recognize the importance of mental illness. I believe that definitely to be true, particularly now because so many people have been sort of isolated. So I'm sure, you know, unfortunately, because of the pandemic, people haven't been around other people. And we're all social animals. So that social isolation, I'm sure, has wreaked havoc on a lot of people's mental health. I'm almost sure of it. And so definitely. So, and obviously you mentioned the toxic people. What do you do if you have a boss that's toxic? That's kind of hard. My opinion is that people should try to maybe leave that job if possible.
That's the first, that's definitely the first choice. But what if you can't? What if you need it for childcare? What if you need it for health insurance? What if you, what if it's the right distance? What if you can't commute further? What, you know, there's a million reasons why you'd have to stay in that situation, and how can you make it tolerable for yourself? And that's definitely what I help you with.
Definitely. And, and so obviously, you know, this, I think, is critical advice because I've dealt with quite a few individuals like this in the workplace. It's not fun.
Nope.
Not fun at all.
No.
So I'm curious. Now, obviously, as a coach, I think more and more people are seeing the need for coaching. But there are a few who look at this and say, well, why do I need to pay someone money to be a coach? Why can't I just figure this out on my own, read a book, or just, people who roll their eyes or were skeptical or cynical about this kind of thing, what would you say to them?
Well, they might just be that toxic boss. Let's start there.
Right.
But I don't think coaches are for everyone. I think that a lot of people feel that they are the master of their own destiny and that they can, make decisions and read a book or take a course and that they'll be fine. I have found, particularly in the last 10 years, that you need to be receptive to what other people are putting out there in order for you to benefit from it. And I have found that when someone notices something about you, a lot of times you don't see it yourself. We're all so focused and, you know, we're all so integrated into that daily grind, you know. It's so hard for us to even, like, think about how do we integrate exercise or a healthy lifestyle into our regular routine that we hire other people to help us with that. Why is the weight loss industry like the number one industry, right?
Right.
If people could just eat healthy and exercise on their own, that industry wouldn't be so successful. I think that's the best example of why coaching works, right?
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yes, and we need someone to keep us accountable. I think that, you know, even if you feel like you're not a great subject for coaching, like that you don't want to hire a coach and you're not interested in that, you should think about at least partnering with a friend or a coworker and making yourself accountable and for some behavior, whether that's, you know, reading more or walking more or eating better, whatever it is. I think that at the very least that can help you. But what I know is that for me, coaching is necessary to bring my business to the next level. You know, my background certainly is vast. My experience is organizational leadership and fundraising and law. Mm-hmm. But I love public speaking, and I certainly love connecting with people and building relationships. So for me, coaching is a natural progression. You know, I have some fun statistics if you're interested about.
Sure.
Okay. Did you know that up to 45% of people feel work-related anxiety? So that's not a good thing. Like, that's something that we should alleviate, you know, because either you're not at the right place or you're not projecting yourself in the best light. There's a study that the Society of Human Resource Management, they're called SHRM, S-H-R-M, they found that toxic workplace cultures have driven 20% of U.S. employees out of their jobs in the past 5 years at a turnover rate cost greater than $223 billion.
Wow.
So that is staggering, absolutely staggering to me. But I worked for an organization that had almost a 25% turnover rate in 1 year.
Wow.
And if you don't, yeah, I mean, like, you have to think that there is cost associated with that. Every time you're advertising and hiring and training and taking the time and the losses to the organization in the meantime, like, we need to hire better people. We need to make sure that we're hiring good fits. Spend the time. So I'm happy to help all of the participants in those issues.
Wow, that's amazing. And those are scary stats,
yeah.
Very ugly numbers. It's interesting.
Yeah.
yeah, I actually wanted to piggyback on that and mention to you, apparently the most common time for people to have a heart attack is actually Monday morning, because the stress and anxiety of work get to them. Crazy, right?
That's terrible. Well, I mean, I know a lot of people that on Sunday – they get in this mindset that they have to have a full week at this horrible place. And so they, you know, they start to like pull away from their family and they get in a grumpy mood and now they're planning and all they're thinking about that anxiety, they're building it up about Monday morning. So that your statistic is very plausible. Very, very.
Yeah. Yeah. And you mentioned turnover and, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention this. Apparently, I was watching a story on cable news, and Amazon, which I'm a company everyone's familiar with, apparently over time they may become the largest employer, I think private employer in the United States.
Wow.
They have crazy turnover in their warehouses, and the conditions there are just god-awful. And, very shocking numbers when it comes to Amazon, and it's unfortunate. I think with Jeff Bezos, he could afford to have lower turnover, I would imagine, and pay the workers at the warehouses much better. But here you have a firm that may be the largest private employer in the United States,
wow.
If not now, later. And they have massive turnover. The numbers are crazy. I believe a warehouse may turn over all of its employees within a year and a half.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. That's terrible.
Delivering boxes, you know, they have to get all these packages together. And it's by design because they don't want a unionization and whatnot. So apparently, but they're going to run into an issue because now so many people are applying, they may run out of folks, so to speak. So they're going to have to change that. So it's just not an effective business model. This massive turnover. And a lot of it ties into the low minimum wage we have. And but I may be getting off topic here, but So you're definitely right. There's definitely a lot of workplace anxiety out there. You also had mentioned earlier when it comes to coaching, this idea of accountability, which I totally agree with you about. They've done studies where they found that people are more likely to accomplish their New Year's resolutions when they have someone holding them accountable. And if they write it down and have someone hold. And so there is something to that. And, you know, a coach can hold you accountable in a way that a book can't, that a magazine article or blog can't. And so a human being has to hold you accountable, not any of these, you know, social media posts or whatnot. They can't do it, but a human being can. And you mentioned before that there's so much diet food or pills or supplements or whatnot and gyms, but people are still overweight. And it's interesting. It reminds me of someone who told me that there's a lot of self-help books out there, but people aren't really implementing it. And a lot of people buy these books and, it may not really amount to a change in people's lives because it just amounts to what he called shelf help. Shelf help for the shelf. And so, you know, there's something about just having a coach there, someone to guide you and whatnot. And even if you can't afford a coach, you have a friend, you have a form of mastermind thing, and both of you guys can hold each other accountable. And it's interesting, you mentioned that a coach can also give you an outsider perspective. You know, usually a person may miss the forest for the trees when they're working on what they got to work on. But someone from the outside can give you that different angle, that different perspective. So, I truly believe that to be true. And so I think coaches, are very important.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. So so I think you're doing obviously great work. And I'm curious, now obviously you've assisted and helped many people. And I'm curious, can you tell us the most moving or entertaining stories from your life or career?
Well, I have a funny story. So when I was at an organization where I was brought in to be part of a succession plan for an aging director, and the board had really brought me on, and the director wanted nothing to do with me.
Because, oh, wow.
Right? So it was a situation I had never been in before where he just didn't want me around and certainly didn't want to promote me or have me have the spotlight at all. He was very intent on keeping the spotlight. But when he asked me, which is that it's hard. He's a kind of one of the toxic bosses. So one year he asked me, though, to speak at our annual meeting. And our annual meeting was big. It was like, more than 250 people, members of the community, donors, prospects, stakeholders, lots of people. And I felt like it was my shot. Like I had to take my shot at this event. And I had to make an impact quickly and stick out. So I did something very much out of my comfort zone. I am not a singer. I've never purported to be a singer. I do not sing well. I don't even sing in the shower, okay? So I decided that in order to start my speech to really get everyone's attention, that I would sing the first few lines, and they were modified lyrics from the Broadway show, The Book of Mormon. So I don't even know if everybody knew what I was doing, but I succeeded because it got their attention, and they definitely listened to the rest of my speech, and I got laughs and applause, and so that was what I was going for, and I held on to it, and I have no regrets because of that. So I did it, and it's actually on my demo reel on my website. So if you want to laugh and hear me sing, go right ahead and listen to that. So,
all right. Well, I'll definitely check it out. I'm sure you probably have an excellent singing voice. So,
no.
You should. You don't? Oh, okay.
No.
I'll take a listen and I'll see.
Okay.
And I won't judge you too harshly, I promise.
Okay. Thank you.
So, but that's interesting, and obviously that can help you to overcome, you know, an individual can overcome their nerves if they're speaking in front of hundreds of people. Perhaps they can sing a Broadway tune. I'm sure it works every
yeah.
time. And I'm curious, you said that this was your shot and you took advantage of that opportunity, so I like that. I'm curious. Now, obviously, there are so many coaches out there, and the barrier to entry is very low, so you don't have to pass a test. You don't have to pass a bar exam to become a coach, so to speak. You can just call yourself a coach and be in business and probably make as much money as a lawyer does if you're real good at it, which is interesting.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. I'm curious, what competitive advantages do you have as a coach? Like, what makes you stand out?
Well, I think, first of all, my BA is in psychology. So I do have a great foundation for understanding people. And I think that's why I've always been a lifelong observer of people and certainly a builder of relationships. What I discovered after 20 years of being in organizational leadership was that I was a relationship architect or a relationship, ambassador. I loved creating and building these relationships into a network that I could then call on to achieve whatever the organization I was leading at the time, whatever their goal was. So that part, I feel like my experience plus my education, certainly going to law school, I mean, as you said, you don't need any educational requirements, but I think all of that goes into who you are as a person and your multiple layers of professionalism and your ability to talk about so many different things. Also, I practice reflective listening, which is so important in being able to build relationships, and it's probably the most important part of coaching because people want to be seen and heard. And we need to listen, not to respond, but to understand. And I think that that sets me apart.
Wonderful. That's amazing. So it's interesting. Now, you have the BA in psychology, so you've actually studied human behavior, the human mind, and you're a lifelong observer of people. And so you have a leg up on other coaches who may not have this kind of experience. Now, my understanding, you said that you spent 2 decades in the leadership organizational realm, so to speak, and where you had to essentially work with relationships or build relationships and obviously maintain those relationships and maintain a network and whatnot. And you're skilled in what you called reflective listening, which I think is amazing, where people, obviously like to feel like they've been seen and heard. And I think that's very critical when it comes to sales, when it comes to negotiation, when it comes to anything in life, being an important listener, so important. So many people just listen to respond, but you have to sort of listen and suspend your agenda, just truly listen. And that is, it's interesting. I interviewed another guest who actually calls himself a motivational listener.
That's great.
You like that?
So
he's a networking expert, and he also wrote a book. I very well may introduce you to him, and he also has a podcast. So he also wrote a book, and he talks about to start relationships by throwing out a lot of questions and listening. So there is definitely something to that, and it's interesting. I can see what sets you apart as a coach, but you also mentioned the importance of relationships, and you mentioned the word network, and that kind of turns me on in a little way because obviously everyone's network is their net worth, and I tell people all the time, the more you network, the luckier you get. So I'm curious. Now, I know you know a thing or two about networking, of course, and I would consider you a networking expert, by the way.
Thank you.
So
thank you.
my question for you then is, obviously, networking is so important for entrepreneurs because they can get to a point where they can rely mostly or solely on referrals, which is great. And for also for job hunters, particularly now with high unemployment, networking is the primary number one way to find work. And so, you know, this is advice that could apply to anyone. So I'm curious, what tips would you give to people when it comes to networking and building a solid network?
Well, you know, throughout my career pre-pandemic, I would tell you I've built, you know, enduring relationships that have lasted past my time with one organization or another, which I think is great because those individuals become part of your overall network then as you continue forward. But certainly, probably before the pandemic and certainly during and right now, I have found that the LinkedIn platform is certainly the best tool to expand my network exponentially and reach people that I never would have encountered in any other place or way. You know, certainly we're restricted by our geography in a traditional relationship building setting. But on LinkedIn, I am connected to people around the globe. I have had great conversations. I've had great exchanges with all different people. And, you know, now I'm using LinkedIn more and more. In the last year, I began to engage in other people's posts, liking and supporting and making comments. And that led to more connections. So I would encourage people, you know, it's funny. Teenagers, millennials, they're not afraid to express their opinions online. But like for me, I was just afraid to like put something out there. Like you just don't know. You want it to be successful, but you overthink it. And I think sometimes, you know, like the idea of it being perfect gets in the way of the progress of what you're trying to accomplish, you know, like I'm agonizing over the perfection of it. So what now I've started posting regularly. I have over 10,000 followers. Like I would just highly encourage people to invest their time in LinkedIn.
Yes. And I think that's excellent advice. We actually met on LinkedIn. I think you reached out to me.
Correct.
Right?
Yes.
So
correct.
There you go. And LinkedIn is the number one platform for networking. I'm very big on LinkedIn. And I've tried Lunch Club, all types of, you know, networking sites and apps, but nothing beats LinkedIn. And because with LinkedIn, you can do targeted networking. You know, you can put out a search for podcasters, and I'm sure that's probably how you reach me, or you can put out a search for, you know, whatever you're interested in, and you can find people and then change the parameters of the search. And so with LinkedIn, you do targeted networking, because when you go to a networking event, you don't know who you're going to meet. It's sort of random. Nothing wrong with that, but the idea with LinkedIn that you can actually do very targeted, specific networking, find people within a niche and send them out a connection request. And people are very kind about accepting connection requests, which is amazing. And so it's curious because LinkedIn started off as a job hunting platform. It still is in some way, but it's sort of morphed into this huge networking platform, which I think is amazing. And it's incredible, right? And you can reach people around the world and obviously have conversations with them on LinkedIn or set up a Zoom thing and do a face-to-face with them, which is amazing. It's made the world a smaller place and made us all sort of interconnected. So LinkedIn obviously is a platform that has hundreds of millions of users. At some point, it's going to be, I think, it's going to get really big. It's sort of like the business version, professional version of Facebook. I still think LinkedIn still has a lot of room to grow, and so to speak. So definitely, I think that's amazing advice. And you're someone who creates what you call enduring relationships, which I think is amazing. And you also had some advice for my generation, and I guess this could apply to Generation Z. I think you mentioned don't let the good be the enemy of the perfect. Is that so to speak?
Yes.
And that's amazing advice. And obviously, and then now I'm a millennial, and people younger than me are quote unquote Gen Z. And apparently Gen Z is more technologically dialed in than we are. So they kind of really grew up with this stuff. Yeah, because when we grew up, the internet was coming about. But now these kids, they've grown up with Facebook. They've grown up with, now they're on TikTok. So it just kind of blows your mind, really. So,
Absolutely.
Right. And there's a lot of good with it. And unfortunately, there's also a lot of bad with that. But I guess that's a whole nother conversation, so to speak, about technology and kids. So, but yes, I think that's excellent networking advice. People need to get a profile on LinkedIn if they haven't already. They need to get on LinkedIn. It's so important, and start connecting and building a network. The thing with me is that on my LinkedIn profile, you'll see that I have around maybe 7,000 or 8,000 connections, because when people send me connection requests, I almost always say yes. And someone tried to dissuade me from doing that, but I said, you know, networking is all about meeting people that you don't know already, right? That I imagine. So I say yes, and I benefited greatly from that. And I think more and more people are coming around to that kind of line of thinking. So, you know, LinkedIn is like a big online networking event that never stops 24/7. You never have to leave your home. So I guess I can go on and on about this, but I won't. I guess my next question for you is, obviously, there's a lot of social ills in society, homophobia, sexism, racism, and whatnot. I'm curious, have you ever faced sexism or discrimination on your journey? And if so, how have you been able to overcome that?
So, unfortunately, the answer is yes. As a female in a boardroom situation for most of my career, you know, there were lots of the terminology that's being used now are microaggressions. So they're things that we're supposed to just, you know, shrug off and move on, like as if it's totally okay for two men to be discussing whether I'm going to have another child in front of me, as if that's an appropriate conversation. Clearly it's not, but that happened. You know, there were many times when, you know, I was told, you know, directors don't sit at the board table at a board meeting. And then a man is hired after me and he's welcome to the table and I'm sitting on the edge like a second class citizen. But those are minor. Those are the microaggressions. But I did have one organization where things were so in my face as to the differences between how I was treated and how my male counterpart was treated that I confronted the board and said, you know, I'm upset. I don't understand why this is happening. Excuse me. And the head of the board, in response, said to me, well, we're not going to pay for the surgery, meaning I would assume gender reassignment for me. So I left that meeting knowing I had no future in that organization, unfortunately.
Wow.
But, you know, it's funny. I don't have this on my profile or on my website yet, but it is coming very soon. I'm working with another woman who happens to be African American, and we're talking about how to integrate, you know, discrimination, equity, and inclusion into your organization. And, you know, what's happened now, it's good in a way because organizations are at a pivotal point where they feel almost like Y2K training. You're probably not old enough for Y2K training. Where you had to do it because time was coming, and if you didn't do it, you know, you were out of the loop. And so people feel like because of what's happening right now that they need to do something. And so we have a special brand that we'll be putting out there, and we'll be speaking and doing workshops for companies as well on that topic. So very hot topic right now, certainly, on discrimination. Mm.
Wonderful. And so, well, thank you for sharing that with us, I guess, first here about your partnership. And so I'd love to be abreast of that to keep me notified about what
Absolutely.
You guys do. And I think that's you guys are doing amazing work. And so, and I wanted to, again, thank you for sharing your story. You mentioned microaggressions. And they're small, but they build up over time, right? And, you know, it's sad that these kinds of things happen. Obviously, there are issues that are even bigger than the microaggressions. We have issues dealing with the gender pay gap and whatnot. And unfortunately, the economic downturn we all suffered hit women harder than men. It's been called the she session, so to speak. So particularly a lot of women had to leave the workforce to take after their children and whatnot. So unfortunately, a lot of women have sort of kind of been left behind a bit. And that's unfortunate. Obviously, there's a lot of progress that has to be made, but a lot of progress that has already been made so far. We're not there yet, but I'd be remiss if I didn't mention, obviously, we have our first female vice president. A woman of color, which is amazing. No matter you know, where you are on the political spectrum, that's great.
Correct.
Historic,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, but obviously, there's still more room to grow, and when it comes to progress for women, and particularly having equality in the boardrooms and in the workplace, it's interesting. I don't know if you know this. In Iceland, the women got equal rights because they all went on strike. They just stopped cooking, cleaning, and they just went out the day, and then everything shut down. And so, and then right after that, they put out gender equal legislation and whatnot. So, and Iceland's never been the same again. And I'd also be remiss if I didn't mention that during the financial crisis, Iceland had a bank that was one of the few banks to survive, and it was run by women. So
interesting. That's fabulous.
Yeah, and all these male-run banks shut down, but this one woman-run bank still survived, and it just goes to show you that you know, women, I think they operate on a higher moral plane than men. I think most men wouldn't disagree with that. So having women in business tends to raise the ethical bar on average bar for business all across the board. So
appreciate that. Yeah.
Right. And so yes, very important to have women. This issue is very dear to me because obviously I have two sisters, one older and younger, and they're very entrepreneurial. They put me to shame, so to speak. So
wow.
Very proud of them. Yes. And so important, you know, for female empowerment. So, again, thank you so much for sharing that story. And my belief is that things will get better in the future. I'm curious now, there may be people listening to you and maybe young girls and women themselves, and they and men and boys too. They may say to themselves, you know, this seems very interesting. I'd love to do what Lynn's doing. And I'd love to be a coach. I'd love to be a speaker and whatnot. What advice would you give to someone who wants to do what you do?
I would tell them to become an expert in an area where they have significant experience and knowledge. So, you know, I'm never going to be the one who's going to tell you I'm a professional at teaching you tennis, because I'm not a very good tennis player. But I am going to be able to teach you how to walk into a room and how to acclimate quickly to any situation and identify those toxic obstacles in your way. That's something I can talk about for days. Mm-hmm. But you need to be an expert, and you need to use that expertise to solve a problem for a group of people. If you can provide an answer for someone else then you will be desired. I had someone recently tell me that no one is going to care about you until they need to care about you. There's very much a what's in it for me thinking. So if you've changed your frame of mind to think about solving a problem and helping people in some way, then there's something in it for them, and you will be needed.
Wow. That is amazing advice. You mentioned that an individual should become an expert in what they're already knowledgeable about, just really study that field, and they can then sell that knowledge through coaching, through training and whatnot. And so, I think that's amazing advice. And obviously you're skilled in the realm of reading a room, I'm guessing body language and whatnot, and identifying toxic personalities and how to deal with it and whatnot. Yeah. But people need to, right. And that's amazing. And there is a need for that. And but you mentioned that you want to go where there's a need because people do things to help themselves, right?
Right.
So
right.
Not to help you. So what's in it for
right.
me? It's like a radio station everyone's tuned into. It's funny.
Yeah.
I think it's called WF. Let me see. What's in? No, WIIF.
That's it.
And, And it's funny because whenever you take a group picture and you show it to individuals who are in that picture, the first person they look at is themselves, right?
Of course.
They'll look at other people. The first person is like, how did I come out of the picture? So definitely. So, you definitely want to take advantage of that principle. It's human nature. It is what it is. Is it great? Maybe it's not. Maybe it is. But if that's the way human beings are, you take advantage of that. You don't, and you try to go with that. And so I think that's amazing advice. And and again, thank you so much for it.
Yes.
Now, here's the thing. Now, looking at it on the other side of the table here, what advice would you give to someone who's looking for a coach like yourself to work with, who says, okay, I want help. How do I go about finding the best person?
Well, again, I think you need to look to the coach's specialties and what problem you're looking to solve. Like, I'm not going to be the one to lead you through a weight loss journey, but I will be the one to support you in embracing change in your career and pivoting to something different. I have great experience in that. And then helping you figure out where your place is in a company, a corporation, an organization. I really think that you need to look for someone who listens to what you have to say and responds to your concerns. And I don't think you should just hire someone because you connected to them, on social media or because they work for someone else. That may not work for you. I'd ask them if you can, have a call before you enter into any agreement. If they say no, then I would run away, because anyone worth anything is going to have a conversation with you and want to learn more about what your needs are.
Wonderful. I think that's amazing advice. Obviously, you have to look for a coach, as you mentioned, who specializes in what you're trying to get help with. And
so
it has to be someone who listens. So, that old saying, we all have two ears, one mouth, right, to do twice as much listening as speaking.
Very good,
Right. And you also mentioned that you want to shop around. It's like holding an audition or doing a job interview for hiring someone. Don't pick right away. Just take your time and look at quite a few before you decide. Because this is a person that you're going to spend a lot of time with. You're going to share a lot of intimate details, right, of your life with. And
exactly.
You have to trust this.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
So you have to mesh with this person. So very important. So it's curious. Now, obviously, the person, they should offer a free kind of one-hour strategy session or whatnot. And if they don't, don't walk but run to the door.
Right.
And my understanding is most coaches do this, I would hope.
Right.
Maybe I'm wrong. So at least the good ones do.
Yeah.
And so I'm curious now, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention this. Obviously, we talked about business owners and entrepreneurialism and whatnot. And of course, being a coach is like having your own business as well.
Yep.
I'm curious, what now, as you already know, there's a high failure rate with new businesses. Most of them fail within the first couple of years. I'm curious, why is that? And what should entrepreneurs do in general to turn this around?
So I would encourage entrepreneurs to watch CNBC. I have no interest in CNBC, full disclosure. I'm not related to anyone who has interest there. But I love watching the shows. Specifically, I love Marcus Lemonis and his shows. I've learned so much about business and being an entrepreneur from him. Amazing. And that's all free, right? There you go. It's a really good free tip. But I think that entrepreneurs need to have all their bases covered before they start in their business. So there's a lot of really unsexy time to spend researching your market and your competitors and what your clients want and what you can provide. They used to call that a business plan. I'm sure it still is called that. Mm-hmm. But you need to understand about profit and loss, about, you know, keeping your expenses contained, about taxes, about employment, about having a supply if you're selling, you know, widgets, if you're selling things. For example, like I just saw this happen, and this is upsetting to me because it's a young woman that I know. And I guess no one gave her any advice and she didn't seek any advice. But she had a successful online clothing effort. Like it was just starting and she was doing like customized things and tie-dye, whatever. But instead of continuing with that and investing in social media marketing and digital marketing and direct shipping and things that could really change her business immensely, she rented a brick and mortar store. Like this is the opposite of what I would encourage. You know, if someone had asked me, nobody asked me, obviously, but you know, to a brick and mortar store at a time when retail is dying, shopping malls are like, you know, wide open dinosaurs. So why on earth would you pay for a store when you're essentially limiting your audience to a very, very small population, whereas online it's the whole wide world and no rent. So, you know, that's the type of thing that I think entrepreneurs need to really do research in, before pulling the trigger.
Wow. That's amazing. And yeah. You know, it's interesting how someone would make a bright person would, you know, would make a mistake like that. And so it's so important when you're an entrepreneur to do your research. And you mentioned that you have to make sure there's a demand for what you're offering, what you're selling.
Yeah.
You know, and you touched on that earlier when you talked about how when we talked about the radio station WIIFM, you know, you want to offer something as a coach that people actually want. That they have a need for, so important, and you know, it's interesting. And running a business, there's a lot of detail and activities in it that a lot of people who are skilled in one thing that the business may focus around. Let's say they're a baker, but they don't understand accounting, hiring, payroll, and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
you have to that unsexy activities. You have to, you know, do your research about, and there's so much information out there. And so you don't want to, entrepreneurs shouldn't make rush decisions about it. Obviously, most entrepreneurs are very gung-ho. They want it now, and they have that type A personality. They're go-getters, but they have to just, you know, sit down and just wait and do the research. And, you know, it's not fun, but they need to figure out and make educated decisions about how they go about things. And so, and learn from the mistakes of others, perhaps get a business coach. Business coaches are great.
Yes.
So I think that's excellent advice. And unfortunately, I think a lot of people are trying to go in business for themselves, but they which is great, but they have to do it right. So I'm curious. Now, you've mentioned already quite a few important life lessons for anyone and everyone, no matter what field they're in. And so I'm curious, in addition to those, what other life lessons have you learned yourself or from others along the way?
So it's funny, you said something just now that made me think. You know, I look back, and certainly we all look back at our decisions and we think, oh, that was a mistake. But it really wasn't a mistake. It was a learning opportunity. And there's something that we took away from that that we have to realize we needed. And we needed to experience that in order to have the next stage, the next phase of whatever we're going through. So I look at the places I worked at that were terrible and that I really did not love, and I didn't love the toxic bosses that were there, but I learned so much and it brought me to this place. So I'm grateful for that. So I can't look back with regret. So that's number one. Number two, someone told me this very, very early in my career, and I can't say as I fully comprehended it at the time, but I do now. You are not a prophet to your own community. And it's funny, when I heard it, I didn't know if it was prophet or profit. And I actually think it's both, because you're not a prophet to your own community. And so what that means is, you know, it's funny, in the show Modern Family, if you watch that at all, they call this the wedge salad. Because, you know, when you have been trying to tell someone close to you, whether it's a spouse or significant other or a child or a coworker, about something they should try or something that they would like or whatever it is, or a new concept or a new training, they often don't hear you. And yet when you bring someone else in, they come in and they say, hey, you should try the wedge salad. And then all of a sudden you say, what a good idea. So I'm going to try that. And the person closest to you who's been trying to tell you to try that for years is, of course, a little upset. But in the meantime, we have to realize that and embrace it, so that when you want to communicate something to your organization, but they're not receptive to you, what a great opportunity for me to come in and assist you in delivering that and some of these other messages. So that's the great value, I think, of a speaker and bringing someone else into your organization.
Right. And again, thank you so much for that key advice. And there is something to that. When someone who you don't know, a stranger, says something, it has there's more, people hold more weight to it for some reason, as opposed to if it's said by a friend. I've experienced this myself, and that is so they have more respect for the stranger than they have for you, a family member, a friend that they've known for years. Why? I don't know. There's psychological principle to this. I don't know what the name of it is, but it's very true. But again, it's something that you may not like it, but it's something, it's a part of human nature that you can work with, that you can use to your advantage. And, and that's where you come in, of course, as a speaker. You can go into this organization, say maybe the similar things that management's saying, but they hear it from you and they respect it more. So, and they could hear maybe some different things from you as well, of course. And, definitely. Now, you mentioned, I guess we can call it the wet salad principle, modern the family. And
that's what we call it in my house, yes.
Right. And so people shouldn't be mad about it. They just understand that this is the way it is. And I guess the more you understand human nature, the less upset you are with people, I suppose. But
agreed.
Right. You mentioned failure, and oftentimes it's a learning experience. I had a guest that came on and said there's no such thing as failure, just learning experiences. And I totally agree with the both of you guys. I guess the only time you really fail is if you get knocked down and you don't get back up, right? And you just quit. That might be the only time you really fail. But it's interesting because many successful entrepreneurs actually failed multiple times before they reached their success. And a lot of people don't see that. They just see the success, but they don't see the past failures they had. I always tell people about the story of the guy who founded Domino's Pizza. He filed for bankruptcy multiple times and was a mess, believe it or not. But we all know what Domino's Pizza is. It's a household name. So and so there's countless stories like that of people who've had years, they were just toiling and whatnot, like Colonel Sanders, who founded KFC. He was just living out his car, his truck, and just going around trying to Hawker's recipe and having the door slammed in his face everywhere, but he didn't quit. And, you know, we all know what KFC is. So obviously there's so many stories like that where it wasn't easy for successful people, and not a lot of people understand this principle. So definitely. Thank you so much for that clarification that you made. And so now I'm curious now, what book recommendations would you have for folks?
Well, so it's so funny that this is just a perfect segue to what you just said, because I think that reading biographies of successful people and listening, hearing them talk about their failures along the way is so motivating to know that they've tried and failed and tried again, and they finally succeeded. Like, I find such inspiration in their stories. So I just started the Sam Zell book. Sam Zell is a very famous multi-millionaire in real estate. His book is called Am I Being Too Subtle? And he started in college. And you just, like, these are the kind of people that you read it and you think, I would like to have a cup of coffee with this guy. You know, he sounds fascinating. So I highly recommend. And you know, you can read books from people in your own industries. You don't have to read them about real estate or, you know, about, you know, CEOs of companies. You can read about anybody who has succeeded in an area that you're interested in. I think those are absolutely fascinating.
Wow, that's amazing. And I'm a fan of reading biographies as well. I think, you know, these are stories of great, successful people. And you mentioned Sam Zell. I believe he's probably at this point a billionaire, right? And,
oh, probably. I'm lowballing that. Yeah.
And so yeah, and Sam Zell, I've heard of. Definitely, based on your recommendation, I'm going to check out his book. I'm going to see if it's on Scribd. Are there any other biographies you mentioned, or?
That's all that I've been reading right now, but certainly. I know my husband just finished the Jack Welch biography. I didn't read it yet, but he really enjoyed that, enjoyed the fact that he was the kind of person who liked to surround himself with smart people, which I highly admire, because, you know, the people that all that think they're the smartest people in the room are always the toxic bosses. So, you know, anyone who appreciates other opinions and other ideas and embraces that creativity and innovation, you know, I'm on board. So that sounds
good.
I haven't read that yet. Yes.
All right. Definitely. I'll check that out as well. You're actually that principle of having surrounding yourself with smart people, not just yes men or yes women. It reminds me of Abraham Lincoln. There was a biography of his book that was written called Team of Rivals, and he followed the same principle, actually.
Uh-oh.
And yeah, so yeah, that was a great book. I haven't read it yet, but so many people have high praise for it. So I'm curious now, are you ever going to write a book yourself, perhaps about your life or any other topic?
Well, so funny you should ask, Luke. I am the author of the forthcoming book, and it's titled Wrecking Ball Relationships, How to Identify, Live With, or Leave the Narcissist in Your Life.
Wow. Definitely. I'm going to give that a look. And
hopefully,
thank you.
Hopefully by the end of this year, you'll see it out there. So.
Well, keep me posted on that, and I'll be the first person online to buy it. So you have at least one customer.
Thank you.
You got it. And I guess I'd be remiss if I didn't mention, are you ever going to start your own podcast? I think it'd be great as a podcast.
Oh, that's so nice. I really don't have any plans to do that. I certainly don't think I could possibly be on your level, but I guess I'm at a point in my life where I'm not ruling anything out.
All right. Well, just keep in mind that to start a podcast is really simple and free with Anchor. And so I think it's something that you can definitely look into. It can help to expand your reach. But, you know, on the other hand, you can just be a guest on other people's podcasts. So that's
right.
Actually even more effective. So one guest told me that's where the magic really happens. So I'll definitely be introducing you to other podcasters. Yeah.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Definitely. And also there are websites you can go on to seek podcasters out to be a guest. So I'll be emailing that to you shortly. Okay.
Oh, great. Yeah.
All right. And so I'd also be remiss if I didn't also give you this question. Can you, let me see here, can you go ahead and describe all the ways that people can reach out and connect with you so they can put a dynamic center of influence like yourself in their network?
Oh, that would be phenomenal. Thank you. please connect with me on LinkedIn, Lynn Catalano on LinkedIn. I'm on Instagram, at Lynn Catalano Speaks. I'm on Facebook, Lynn Catalano Speaks. And then also www.lynncatalano.com.
Okay. Thank you so much for that. All right. And just so you know, that all the information you just provided will be available in the episode description area. Okay.
Great.
So
thank you.
You got it. So people will be able to see it and read it there. They can connect with you on LinkedIn or Instagram, Facebook, or go to your website. So they will see it there. I wanted to go ahead and thank you for being a guest on the show. This has been a very inspiring and enlightening conversation. And so, again, it's an honor to have you as a guest on this show. And I wanted to thank the audience for listening. Do you want to go ahead and leave us with a last word or final send-off?
Well, I must say, Luke, thank you for inviting me to be on this on your show. I really appreciate it, and I've really enjoyed our conversation today. I hope everyone's as inspired as you and I are. I'm ready to go out there and see where I can contribute and how I can help people. So thank you so much.
You got it. And thank you again for being a guest and for the audience. Thank you guys again for listening. And I'm going to see you guys in the next episode. Everyone have a wonderful, excellent, and blessed day. Thank you. Hey guys, before you go, just real quick, if you can just do me a favor, if you can head over to the Apple Podcasts app, and if you're not there already, and if you can leave me a 5-star review, that'd be great. If you love the show, if you can just go ahead and do that, and that will help to spread the word about the show, and other people can enjoy the show as much as you do. And so if you can do that, that would mean the world to me. And also, if you want to email me with any feedback or any praise or support, please feel free to go ahead and do that. And you can also email me to request to be put on our email list. So we can send you out emails when new episodes come out. So thank you very much for being a fan of the show. Thank you for listening to the show and supporting the show. So if you can do that, go out and give us a 5-star review on the Apple Podcast app. That would be great. And if you can email us so we can put you on the email list and email us with feedback and praise, that would be amazing. Thank you so much, and I'll see you guys in the next episode. Take care. Bye-bye.